Good morning or good afternoon to everyone, depending on where you are. We're going to get started in just a couple of minutes, but we're giving everyone a chance to get in this on our webinar today. So we're actually trying out a little bit of new technology, so I think we hung up on everyone just a few minutes ago. Apologize. We'll get that sorted out over the next couple of minutes. So thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be getting started in just a couple of minutes. Once again, we want to welcome everyone to our webinar, 2017 Retention Report, Trends, Reasons, and Recommendations. It's just about 1 minute after 11 here in what we're now calling Hockey Town, Nashville, Tennessee. So we're going to give just a couple more minutes for some folks to get dialed in, and then we will get started. Okay, once again, hello everyone, and welcome to our webinar, 2017 Retention Report, Trends, Reasons, and Recommendations. We're very excited that you chose to join us today, and hopefully you will learn a lot over the next hour or so. This has been a dream in the making for a number of years. The report that we published just a few short weeks ago that was literally broadcast all over the country. Multiple media outlets picked it up. It was reported, parts of it were reported in the Yahoo Finance, USA Today. It's something that we've been dreaming about for a long time, and finally we're able to accomplish the task just a few weeks ago. And the report is absolutely chock full of information, meaningful information. Hopefully you've seen it. And if not, you're going to certainly learn a lot about it today, and then we'll be able to download the report at a later date. So again, we're going to be moving very, very fast today. There's a lot of information that we're going to try and provide to you. However, we are going to give you chances to ask questions. So in this new technology that we mentioned earlier, you should have a box on the right of your screen where it's very easy to enter a question in and then submit that question. So you can submit those throughout the presentation, and we'll try and find a pause or a moment that we'll be able to respond to those. I also want to introduce my co-presenter, Dr. Lindsay Sears, AVP of Research and Analytics here at Work Institute. So good morning, Lindsay.
Hi there. Happy to be here and excited to tell you guys what we found in the data.
Excellent. So I'm going to get things kicked off, and then Lindsay will come in right behind me.
I'll introduce my co-presenter, Dr. Lindsay Sears.
All right. Again, small technical glitch. We were hearing ourselves talk, but we got that fixed very quickly. All right. So one of the things that is extremely important, we believe, in looking at retention is to actually look at how much it's costing. And one of the things about the Work Institute, about the work we've done over the years, is work specifically related to understanding controllable human capital cost. And one of the controllable human capital costs is to actually figure out how to retain our employees more effectively. And one of the things that we found was obviously turnover in the U.S. is going up, and the costs related to that are literally astronomical, and the number is so big that most people just can't even fathom it. And that number is around $536 billion in the U.S. in voluntary turnover alone. So imagine that. In 2016, the cost to U.S. companies was $536 billion. I mean, we just can't even fathom the number of zeros on that number, and yet it's just unbelievable that that's how much cost there is. That's some 35,700,000 people that voluntarily left their job, and one of the things that we talk about is the fact that it's so very hard to find people. But one of the challenges is that those people may very well be out there, but they're actually just working for somebody else. So we've got to be able to figure out how to better attract and better retain those employees. So we're going to try and break today's presentation down into kind of four sections, if you will. We're going to talk about the truth about the employee marketplace. We're going to talk a little bit stats. We're going to talk about large economic trends that are going on right now. And then at that point, I'll actually turn the presentation over to Lindsay, and she's going to talk about getting to the real reasons employees leave. We're going to talk about the truth about reasons employees stay. We're going to do this by sort of marching through the 10 truths that we found as we built out this retention report, again, several weeks ago. And then I'll come back on in the very end and talk about what organizations must take action to improve employee retention. So the really things that you need to take away from this presentation, the things that you need to take back to your organization and that you probably should be working on right now. So what does this marketplace look like? And I would tell you that the term I refer to a lot is actually the perfect storm. And you may recall The Perfect Storm was a movie with, I think it was Mark Wahlberg a number of years ago, and literally three storm systems all collided at the same time to create one of the worst weather disasters in the Northeast ever. And that's kind of what we're getting right now. So the chart that you should be seeing now has got four items that are on it. Obviously, the top number that you see there is unemployment. And we see the trend that occurred during the recession where obviously we almost got to 10% unemployment, and then we've seen the decline in the unemployment rate since 2010. Right now it's sitting at about 4.3, 4.4%, I think, with the latest jobs report. So from all indicators, we are at full employment in the U.S. The next line that you see there, kind of a grayish line, is the separation. So this is the total number of separations, meaning those folks that both voluntarily or involuntarily left their job or were laid off. And so that has been slightly increasing still. But then the next line is the total number of job openings. And what's really historic is that the line for job openings has now exceeded the line for total separations. And that has never happened as long as the Bureau of Labor Statistics has been tracking this information. So this is absolutely important to pay attention to. And then the bottom line is actually the quit rate, which is the number of voluntary separations from organizations. So the number of people that are just saying, we think the grass is greener somewhere else. So all of these economic trends are all coming together to create a very, very difficult marketplace. And so what we're going to see over the course of the next 10 years or so is we're going to see that the marketplace, the number of job openings is actually going to increase at a higher rate than we're actually going to create a job force to take those jobs. So we've got some 9.8 million jobs that are projected to grow. We've got 9.3 of those that are going to be service sector jobs, and 3.8 million jobs alone in healthcare and social assistance jobs. So we're going to have an annual growth rate that is going to be increasing substantially, and yet our labor force is projected to slow by 2024. So we're going to have a war for talent unlike anything that we've ever seen, and that doesn't include the implications of immigration reform, if that happens to come through in a big way, and also some of the infrastructure plans that are on the table with the Trump administration. So if those things happen in a big way, those could even further impact either the job growth numbers, or it could be affect the available labor force. So what we're seeing today is difficult. We're going to see even more difficult in the coming years. And so we've got to pay close attention to, are we creating the conditions in our organization where we can attract the right workforce and those employees want to stay with us for a long time? So that is really one of the keys, is are we creating the right conditions in our workplace, or are we actually going to be losing them over time? And what that creates is basically an employee in control market. This is a term that was established some 18, 19 years ago when our founder, Dr. Tom Mahan, did some work with the Saratoga Institute, and it was all about the transition from an employee in control marketplace, an employer in control marketplace, to an employee in control marketplace. Employers used to really have the power. They could decide when they hired somebody, when they fired them. People were committed to staying with their employer through thick and thin. Now employees have control. They are choosing to go wherever they want, pretty much at any time they want. And think about it. We have portable health care. We have portable retirement. So it's very easy for folks to go wherever they want to go and not be harmed by that departure. So we have to create the conditions where people are going to want to stay. So with those market conditions in mind, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Dr. Lindsay Sears. By the way, I was just handed a note. We will be sending out all of these slides to each participant today. So if you don't want to take notes furiously, you can get the slides. We'll be sending them out after the presentation today. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Lindsay.
Great. Thank you, Danny. I think you did a great job of laying the landscape and really the challenge that employers are facing today and going to be facing much more in the future. I just wanted to take a quick minute to give a little bit of my background and kind of, I guess, my testimonial for some of the data that I'm about to share with you all. So my background is in IO psychology. And, you know, we get a lot of training in survey research and survey methods, and some of you on the phone might be aware and even experts yourselves in those same areas. The kind of data that I'm going to share with you and the results and the insights from that data is very different, and it's not something you can get at through traditional survey methods. So I'm going to talk to you guys a little bit about that. I also, since I'll be wearing my science hat for this call, I wanted to invite Danny to chime in throughout my section of the presentation with real case examples from his years of consulting and expertise working with clients, because a lot of the stories that he has to share really support some of the points that we found in our data and the things that we're going to recommend to you all to do as best practices in your own workplace transformation efforts. So with that, I wanted to talk a little bit about the data that we used in the retention report and the unique methodology that we applied in order to collect those data. So a little bit different than traditional surveys are going to ask questions that are predetermined, and usually collect some kind of a rating scale, some kind of numeric or quantitative rating on those questions that are predetermined, pre-programmed. This is a little bit different. First of all, in our exit data, so exit interviews are being conducted with people after they've left their job. And specifically in our methodology used to collect these data, this was done by a third party, which was Work Institute, after the employee left their job. This is really important because I think, first of all, most organizations have some mechanism where either a manager or an HR professional selects some kind of drop-down box on the reason the employee left. There is a lot of research out there to show that that is deeply flawed and that decisions you might be making based on that data could be pointing you in the wrong direction. One study specifically by Campion in 91 found that 63% of the reasons that employees gave upon departure changed when they were asked 2 weeks later by a third party. So you think if 63 reasons are different, that just speaks to the possible accuracy and errors that you're getting in that type of data. So these were open-ended interviews that were conducted after the employee departed by a third party, being ourselves. Also, it's not a checklist. It's not a pre-programmed survey, and it's not a drop-down box. These were open-ended interviews that were conducted. And so the very first question people are asked is, why did you leave? We don't prompt them with any suggestions. We don't give them any kind of forced choices or even suggest choices to them. We just ask an open-ended question. Once a respondent gives us an answer, we actually probe for up to 4 reasons that they left. And then the interviewer, who is trained to probe deeper and elicit some of these responses, will ask them, what was the most important reason you left? Oftentimes, we'll see in the data that it's the second or the third or the fourth reason that they gave that they actually say is most important. We do all these steps to ensure that we are getting to the real reasons and the most accurate information of why the person really left. And then lastly, in the interview, all of the responses are directly captured. So our interviewers are directly writing out what people say and how they respond. But then those responses are coded using our proprietary coding methodology by those trained interviewers. And what that means is they're basically categorizing the responses that they hear. They're using a category scheme that has 10 high-level categories and 65 specific reasons. In the 2016 data, we looked at 34,000 exit interviews, which is an enormous number and gives us a lot of confidence in these results. Our trained interviewers coding all of these reasons that we're hearing out of all of these exit interviews, out of the 65 reasons that we capture and are able to categorize the responses, only 1.5% of them fall into the other category and don't have a reason. So that also speaks to how comprehensive and how confident we are that we're really capturing what's really going on with these folks. So I was going to share with you all a little bit about that coding scheme, so that you have some context when we start to talk about the results. I mentioned that there are 65 detailed reasons, but they roll up into 10 high-level categories of reasons people leave. So those 10 are listed here, and then the number of sub-reasons that fall within them are listed out to the right. So I'll just go through and define them a little bit for you so you can get a sense for what are the sub-reasons that fall into each of these. Work-life balance is one category of reasons, and it captures people's travel and scheduling preferences. Career development is another category of reasons that captures opportunities for growth, achievement, and security. Work environment captures the physical and cultural surroundings, so not just where you work, but what is the psychosocial environment like. Management behavior captures the positive and productive relationships between that employee and their leader. Job characteristics have a lot more to do with the job itself, capturing ownership and enjoyment in manageable work. So things like work overload will show up in that category. Compensation and benefits is pretty clear. It captures total rewards promised and received, but thinking beyond just pay, this can also include commission structure, benefits, bonuses, and things like that. Well-being is another category of reasons people leave their jobs, and it captures the physical, emotional, and family-related issues that might cause someone to need to leave their job. And then the last three categories are fairly straightforward. Relocation, even though that's fairly obvious and people will say, I had to relocate, we will capture at a more detailed level why they needed to relocate. So if was it directed from the spouse? Was it some other reason for relocation? We actually have five different categories there. And then oftentimes people, when they're ready to exit the workforce, will leave to retire. And then in other cases, people are asked to leave by the organization, and we do capture involuntary turnover as its own category. And then within that, there could be policy violations, there could be reduction in force, so there are even sub-reasons within involuntary turnover.
You know, Lindsay, for years, we really referred to the Work Institute as a research organization, and part of the reason why we've talked about it that way is the fact that we act like researchers, and qualitative researchers really allow themes to emerge from data. They don't dictate what those themes are going to be. So what you see when these 65 distinctly different reasons why employees left are the themes that have emerged over the years from those 500,000 or so exit interviews that we've completed over the 17 years that the Work Institute has been around. So what you see here is what employees are telling us, not what we want to know. And so that's really important to understand.
That's a great point. So now that you all understand the nature of this data and how it's captured and how it's categorized, so it's turned into quantitative data, I was going to take you through the analysis in the retention report and the 10 truths we learned.
It seems like maybe we're having some technical difficulties again. Hold on just a second. Testing.
Got choppy and then he cut off.
Testing, testing, testing. Can you guys hear us? We're going to pause for just a moment.
It said it was going for an hour and a half, so that's not it either. Nothing now still.
Can you hear us now?
Hey, still have. No one's dropped off. No more questions. Yes, I can hear. Yeah.
Everybody can hear us?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Lindsay.
Sorry for that. Well, it's a good transition point. We're just about to dive into the results. So I wanted to tell you guys, too, we organized the retention report. We found 10 truths, and we're going to share with you what those are, but they're really organized into 10 truths about the reasons employees leave, and then five truths for why employees leave, and the five truths for why they stay, because we also included not just the 34,000 exit interviews, but we also analyzed 11,000 stay and engagement interviews as part of this. So we'll talk a little bit about how it's important to question the employees who currently work for you as well as those who have left. So truth number one, we wanted to put this one as number one because it's by far and away the most important thing that we learned in our data. I think this is a really big disruptive finding even for the scientific literature. So one of the things we wanted to know was how much diversity is there really across companies? You know, you see these academic studies and these big analyses that will look and try to find these universal truths of what causes turnover. And we wanted to really understand if that's real or if there's a lot more variation inside of companies. So what I did is I created what I call turnover profiles, and it's where I categorize the top three of those reasons for leaving for each of our clients. In our 2016 data set, we included 173 companies in this analysis, and out of 173 companies, 73 distinct profiles emerged, and that's those bars that you see going across the bottom of your slide. the fascinating part about this is that there's almost half as many profiles as there are companies in the data set. And then we said, well, maybe there's one profile that's really common and that a lot of companies tend to fit into that really common profile. So we sorted them to see which profile was the most common. And when we did that, we also learned something pretty surprising, that only 7.6 or less than 8% of the companies fit that most common turnover profile that we found. And so this is just looking at the top three reasons for leaving in any order. So we really weren't being that picky in how we defined what these profiles are. I think the big takeaway here is that if you want to make assumptions about general analyses and averages and industry standards, according to our data, there's a very large likelihood that you're wrong if you want to assume that your company looks like some other company. We're going to come back to this point throughout the presentation because a lot of the other things we look at are combining all of this company data into one set of analyses. So just kind of keep it in mind as we go through that there's such differences inside of companies that really the ultimate takeaway is to understand what's going on inside of your specific organization, because it's unlikely that it looks like another one. So truth number two, we wanted to understand, a common thing or myth that's out there is that, well, there's not much I can do about my turnover. You know, a lot of it's these reasons that are out of my control. So we categorized our 10 reasons for leaving into things that are more preventable and things that are less preventable. So things like relocation, retirement, and involuntary aren't as preventable. But some of the other ones, like job characteristics and career development, are completely preventable by the organization. Not only did we see that about 3/4 of turnover that's happening is happening for preventable reasons, but when we looked back, we did an analysis of 250,000 exit interviews over the past 7 years and see that that trend is actually increasing. So we see that the number and proportion of preventable turnover is on the rise.
And Lindsay, I think one of the things that we talk ourselves into is we think that industry conditions just simply are what they are and that there's going to be high turnover. So take maybe the fast food restaurant, for example. We just assume that 100% turnover is, you know, the price of doing business, if you will. And yet you get someone like a Chick-fil-A who has actually debunked that and is operating at less than half of what the national average for turnover in fast food industry is. We work a lot with healthcare companies. We had a company in the dialysis industry where the average is over 40%, and yet they were able to operate at a 12% turnover rate. So there really is a decision that has to be made at the top and then held accountable throughout the organization that we're not going to accept just the industry norms, that we are indeed going to be unique, we're going to do things differently, and we're going to retain our employees. And this would tell us that some 75% or so of the reasons people leave are controllable and we can do something about them.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And it also brings up another point of some of the other analyses that we did that are in the retention report, but they also caused us to want to look closer at industry-specific data. So we wanted to understand, does industry have to do with differences in these profiles? We picked organizations that belong to the same industry and looked at their turnover profiles, and they're vastly different. That caused us to want to see if potentially companies in the healthcare industry had a similar breakout of profiles or if they were a little bit more the same. So we published a healthcare retention report, which is an amendment to this full report, and you all can access if you would like that as well. But in that, we looked at profiles of healthcare organizations and saw that I believe it was 7.2% of healthcare organizations shared the top profile. So it's almost the exact same finding when we look even within the same industry. So I think that just does speak to that diversity point. So we covered that most turnover is preventable, and the preventable reasons for leaving are on the rise. Now to the big moment, what are the top reasons for leaving? What were they in 2016? We did a quick survey of HR managers over the web, and the top reasons that they think people leave had to more to do with manager behavior, you know, people leave bad leaders, that kind of concept. And then they also thought that compensation and benefits were a big reason that people leave. You know, they get a better offer somewhere else. Well, the truth of it is, when we use this data that we've collected in an open-ended way, and we aren't looking for a specific answer, but we're just hearing the employee tell us all possible answers, we see that career development is the top reason people have left. And remember that this captures opportunities for growth, achievement, and security, and it also captures people looking to do something else. You know, in some cases, people have gotten into a job and it's not what they thought it would be, and they want to switch careers. And in other cases, people have been working in that job or industry for a while and they're ready to do something different. But that all is encaptured inside of the career development reasons for leaving. The number two reason that we saw had to do with work-life balance. Again, that was not a top guess of the HR managers that we surveyed. But that really captures things not just related to your ability to manage work and life challenges, but a lot to do with time and scheduling, commute to work, you know, how much time is traffic taking, how much time am I away from my family that I wish I could be spending with them or friends. Again, we have to add that caveat, this is all results on average and really of the combination of very diverse organizations from different industries with different job types inside of these organizations. But at the highest average level, this is what we're seeing in the data.
So, Lindsay, this is one of the things that we talked about over the years that sort of made us nervous about publishing a report like this, is that the reality is that the slide that you see right now is interesting, but in terms of how it affects you and your individual company, it's almost meaningless, because going back to the prior slides, you find that, you know, only a few companies actually are similar to each other. So only, 9.87% or so shared the same profile. So, yes, the number one average reason when you add them all up is career development. That doesn't mean your number one reason for leaving is actually career development. So it's extremely important that you understand why your employees are leaving, what is causing turnover in your organization. And so the slide in front of you is likely meaningless for your organization. So it's interesting. It's fun to look at. We had fun researching it, but in terms of how it affects you, you have to almost ignore it.
So another thing that we looked at was, what is the tenure of the employees who are leaving? This is a really important topic because when people leave your organization early, that means that they haven't necessarily had enough time to get up to speed and begin to add value. So every time you hire someone, you're making an investment that is a cost to your organization. You have to invest time, energy, resources, and dollars into training them and onboarding them and ensuring their success on the job. That takes, one study found that it takes between 3 to 6 months for somebody to get all the way up to speed to the point where they're actually adding value and starting to pay back that cost investment that you made. So when we looked at tenure, we saw that actually a little over one-third of all the employees who exited left in their first year. So again, this can be a huge issue in terms of, it's not just any turnover is created equal. These people may be leaving before they've had a chance to really add value to the organization. It's also important to look at why those first-year turnovers folks are leaving, because their reasons on average looked different than the reasons that other people left who are more tenured employees.
So, Lindsay, I'm going to get you to stop for just a second. We actually got a question about benchmarking. And so in talking about that prior slide, it is basically a form of benchmarking. So in other words, if we as an organization are saying we're going to benchmark ourselves against our peer set, okay? So if I'm a healthcare company and I want to compare myself against other healthcare organizations, and if I recall from the healthcare report, I believe that career development was the number one reason in healthcare that employees left. And so I can assume that if career development, you know, that if career development is not my number one reason, that maybe I'm doing a good job. It just doesn't work that way. Every organization is unique. We have to look at ourselves as unique. And, in fact, best practices come from within.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've really got to pay attention to that. So that's – we could literally spend hours on benchmarking, but it is a very dangerous practice if not used properly.
Good point. So the last truth about reasons employees leave, really, we won't go into a lot of detail on this, but the retention report explains that there are just some concepts floating around out there around generations, around differences, maybe even stereotypes between men and women and people leaving their jobs. And we just really want you all to know that we do not need to be building any kind of workforce strategies around gender or generations. And so really what our data tell us, are there more differences within these categories, within generations and within gender groups, than there are between them? And so making these kind of generalities is not only wrong and probably going to misguide your efforts and lead to a waste, but it probably doesn't make that group feel very good either. It could become a self-fulfilling prophecy if you assume people are going to leave you for certain reasons. So now I want to shift gears a little bit and get into some of the reasons employees stay. So it's really important to think about this because it's the other side of the coin. You know, you're asking people who decided to leave your organization. That is one very important point of view, but there's an entire world of employees still there. They have their own thoughts, beliefs, preferences, and expectations of you that you need to fully understand and build into your strategy to create the changes that are going to make you that preferred employer. So not only does asking your current workforce let you assess what is that future turnover risk, but you can find out and act on some of the strongest predictors of turnover, strongest predictors of engagement. You know, most surveys from a traditional survey methodology are going to force some definition of what engagement and what commitment is. And they're going to have the employees rate those items because that's what we want to know. But that's not necessarily what the employees want to tell us. So we follow a model where we look at the four core drivers of commitment and engagement, but we allow the employees to define what those mean. So in the same way we ask, why did you leave, we'll ask, please rate your employer as a place to work. And then we'll ask them why they gave that rating and leave it completely open-ended, not prescriptive. So in this way, we capture their attitudes around the four core drivers of organization, manager, team, and job. So it really becomes all possible things that could matter to those employees. And those are the drivers that create the conditions for engagement and commitment that are ultimately going to drive value and profit in your organization.
And, Lindsay, just to give an example of this, we've all probably, if we're HR professionals, have done these long 30, 40, 50, 60 questions surveys in our organization. There's almost always a question about compensation, and that question's almost always one of the lowest rated. And so we assume because it's always the lowest rated that, in fact, you know, we're going to just assume we don't have a compensation program. It's just always rated low. And again, this is the bias that exists in survey questions. How do we know that in our organization we don't have a compensation issue? And by asking these kinds of open-ended questions, in fact, if compensation is an issue, we're going to learn about it. And I can tell you the Work Institute has learned about significant compensation issues in organizations and have never asked a single question about compensation.
Very good point. It's that concept that instead of coming up with all the possible things someone might want to tell you, just ask them. So that leads us to truth number 7 about reasons employees stay. And this is just looking at the same question, hey, why do you leave? But we're asking, why do you stay? So when we ask how long people plan to stay with their employer, we have different time ranges, and then the very last option says a long, long time. So people are planning to stay with their employer for a long, long time, and then, just as we ask with every other question, we ask why. So this is an analysis of those data. We looked at the reasons people told us they plan to stay with their employer for a long, long time, and we actually see that the reasons people are staying are different from the top reasons people are leaving. The one really interesting thing is, notice what's at the top of the list, again, is career development. So that is not only the top reason on average people stay, it is the top reason on average people leave. But notice that things like job characteristics and work environment are not huge drivers. People are not saying as often that those are reasons they're leaving. But when we ask what's causing you to want to stay for a long time, those rise closer to the top of the list. Again, this just speaks to getting data from both sides of the coin, current employees right alongside those who have left. So in truth number eight, we did want to kind of come back to that idea of the benchmarks that Danny talked about and sort of point out some really, really important fatal flaws of current survey methodologies that might be out there and that you might be using in parts of your organization, just so that you're aware and you can think about steps to mitigate some of those biases that might be in your data. So we already talked about pre-selected survey topics. You know, can you assume you really know what the real issues in your organization are? Is that going to lead to a 65-question survey? You know, you should really consider asking single, high-level, open-ended questions instead. Flaw number two, lack of actionability. Just because I get a quantitative rating on how well my training is going doesn't tell me what I need to go do. So make sure that the data you're collecting is able to drive action in specifics. The idea that correlation does not equal causation, you know, a lot of survey scores, engagement scores on different topics, if they're stronger predictors of your outcome, then a consultant will tell you you need to act on those issues first. That's not necessarily true. The strongest predictor of turnover is job search behavior. So what am I going to do? Disable all of the job search engines in my, you know, web that's available to my employees? That's not going to stop them from leaving because it's not a cause. It's just an indicator that's correlated, not causal. So the idea there is to get to the real reasons and the root causes of why people are leaving. And then lastly, we'll just come back to that idea of keeping up with the Joneses. Competitive benchmarks, benchmarking your company against some other company in your industry, I think we've already made that point, that you are not like them. And really, the best benchmarks you should be looking to are internal and coming from your own company. That's where your best practices are created. So find mechanisms to identify what those best practices are internally and apply them around the company.
And Lindsay, if we could right here, I'd also like to point out that there are flaws in the way we look at ratings. So if we could back up to the prior slide, this is something that Lindsay didn't point out specifically, but those who rate their manager as fair or poor are 7.6 times more likely to look for a job within 12 months than those who rate their manager as excellent. And then if I recall, we actually looked at specifically how many were willing to stay for a long time if they rated them as good or very good versus excellent, and it was like 2.3 times more likely to look for a job. So literally ratings matter, and really what matters is getting excellent ratings. And so we have this flaw that we like to look at favorable, and it's because it makes us feel good. And I've given the example recently of a company that we looked at where they had like a 96% favorable rating of those that were committed to the success of the company, and yet that company has 34% turnover. So favorable ratings just don't tell the story, and they can lead us in bad directions. So that is one other flaw that we could have really included here, is the flaw of looking at ratings inappropriately.
So one of the analyses we included in the retention report was a predictive model, predicting how long people plan to stay with their employer, because we wanted to know, is this approach to asking for a rating and then asking for reasons actually telling us anything differently from a statistical point of view? And we saw that a huge answer was yes. In this predictive model, first, we entered age and gender as predictors, and notice that they predict 0% of the variance in how long people are going to stay. This really gets back to the whole looking at age, looking at gender, building strategies around those types of things really is not going to help you as much as understanding what's going on at a detail level in your workforce. Then we looked at adding the rating items, so rating of employer, rating of supervisor. These are purely quantitative metrics, and they do explain 18% of the differences in people's intention to stay with the business. But the real value that we saw was when we entered in the reasons to this model. They were dummy-coded, which is just a statistical process by making them kind of a 0-1 category. When we entered all of the top, just the top 10 categories of reasons for leaving, we saw our ability to predict intent to stay jump up 2.3 times more than what it was with just ratings alone. So if you are going to look at correlations, if you are going to look at your survey data, keep in mind that it could be a lot more powerful by opening it up to a more open-ended process. So then the last thing we wanted to point out is bring it back to cost. Danny didn't go into a lot of detail about how we estimate the cost of turnover, but it's all backed by evidence and science, and it's all cited in the retention report that you can access. But what it boils down to is if we want to assume an average worker salary and an average, very conservative estimate of the cost of turnover for that average American worker, you should really start to look at what kind of investment would it take to save how many jobs, and then at what point would you realize a return on that investment? Just assuming an average worker, $100,000 would pay for itself if you could keep 7 people from leaving who would have left. And that's if you just keep them. You could also start to think about how long could we keep them. Maybe we can just extend the lifespan, the employee lifespan of people who stay. And there's cost savings there as well. So this point is just bringing it back to the importance of valuing and calculating a return on the investments that you're making in this area to become a preferred employer. So with that, I'm going to segue back to Danny. He's going to give you some practical recommendations that also hit on this cost item.
Thank you, Lindsay. Great information, as always. So I want to just kind of wrap it up, and I'd like to ask everybody to start getting your questions ready and actually submit those questions to us via the web. So we're going to get to those in just about 4 or 5 minutes. But everything is about action. So, again, everything that we've talked about is interesting. It's interesting data. It's interesting information. If you're doing exit interviews, if you're doing engagement studies or stay interviews in your organization, it's great and it's good information and it might be actionable, but we have to do something about it in order to impact behaviors in our organization. So, first and foremost, you have to make the decision that you're going to create the conditions of a preferred employer. And in order to create those conditions, we have to ask employees first and foremost. We've got to get information from our employees. And I'm going to do this out of order a little bit. It's in order to talk about that or get that information by asking in the right way. So Lindsay went through, you know, the methodology, if you will, and the methodology of saying, you know, do you feel your compensation is fair? And getting a rating and then having a comment box is simply flawed. And we need to simply ask some simple, open-ended questions about job, about organization, about team, about manager. And those 4 questions alone are going to create literally a mountain of information that's going to help us to become a preferred employer. And we have proven this over and over time and time again here at the Work Institute. I mean, we have an organization that went from 40-plus turnover to under 15% turnover by simply asking 4 questions. And it is very doable. You get very rich data. And then it's not biased. We're not biasing it by wanting to be employer in control. We're allowing the employee in to be in control. So you have to make the decisions to be a preferred employer, to create those conditions, to collect data from the employee, to act on that data, to respond to that information, to communicate properly to employees. It's one of the things that we don't do a great job of. In fact, we were having a conversation about that before this webinar. And, you know, we have lots of reasons, scientific reasons, why you need to give feedback to employees, like expectancy theory. But one of our colleagues here said, you know, it's just the right thing to do. When you ask employees to give you feedback, the right thing to do is to give them information on what they said. So we need to create those conditions of a preferred employer. We need to ask the right way. We need to show the financial impact of those actions. So understanding the financial impact of turnover, and Lindsay's right, we didn't focus on that very much at the very beginning. How did we create that $536 billion number? But literally $15,000 is the average turnover cost for an average employee in the U.S. So apply that to your organization. How many people left in 2016, and multiply that times $15,000. And I think the number that you're going to get is going to surprise you, just how large that number is. And just by doing some simple things, by collecting data in the right way and acting on that data, it's very likely that you could see a 15% improvement in that number in a very short period of time. And that is really all about understanding and acting according to your data. So if we can collect the data properly, if we know the financial impact, and we act on that data appropriately, we can make significant impacts in our organization. And we can be a profit center. HR has long been trying to sort of find ways to make financial impact, and this is one of those ways. Now, we can't do it on our own. We need to make operations accountable. But what we can do is to point out what the data tells us we need to be doing so that we can actually go take actions on that information and make a financial impact. So those are the things that you really need to take away and think about doing in your organization. So at this time, we'd like to open it up for questions, and it looks like at least a couple of them are coming in. So I will mention the question, and then we'll either Lindsay or I, one, will attack this. How do you recommend tracking or measuring the success of your actions? So I think this is a great thing. Lindsay, why don't you take this one from the standpoint of our impact model and how we talk about tracking in the impact model.
Absolutely. It's such a good point because a lot of organizations, first of all, don't do a needs analysis or collect this data to tell you what you need. And a lot of organizations don't ever measure if their actions work. So obviously that is something that we recommend as part of an entire end-to-end process where you're asking for the right information the right way, you develop a strategy and a plan to act on it, you implement that plan, and then you're tracking those results regularly. So the way that we do that here is have an in-depth study once or twice a year. So you could think of it as your engagement study or as your stay study. You're collecting exit interviews ongoing to understand what that population who is leaving ongoing is perceiving and thinking. But then you need to have intermittent pulses to capture how things are trending and tracking. So what we have built is this ability to pulse, which is just a very brief, anonymous, three-question survey that can go out. We recommend the more frequently that you can pulse and then feed back those results into your workforce, the more likely they are to get used to the idea of responding and providing input. But the notion is once you collect data and you do build a plan and a strategy to attack, let's say, three of your top areas that you know need to be improved, those become your three pulse questions. And then monthly or quarterly, you pulse out that survey of those three questions, get employees to weigh in, and you're able to track if what you're doing has an intended impact. I have to tell you guys just a brief story of a client who thought they were doing the right thing. They saw that scheduling was a problem, but all they got was a rating that told them scheduling is a problem. So they created a solution. They implemented a new scheduling system, but did not realize until 6 months later that that scheduling solution they implemented was not being well received at all, is actually having unintended consequences, but they thought they were doing the right thing. The way to find out if your actions are actually working, maybe working against you, is to have that intermittent pulsing.
Great. All right, so if anybody else has any other questions, please feel free to submit them. If I could, I'm just going to take a couple of minutes. Obviously, when we present information like this, we try and present it in a very objective and unbiased way. But I'm going to sort of take off our research and our publication hat for a minute, and I'm going to put on President of the Work Institute hat and tell you that our business is growing substantially, and more companies are realizing the power of collecting data and analyzing that data in a different way. There are significant frustrations in the marketplace with the way things have been done historically. In fact, I was reading an article just yesterday that was talking about the fact that engagement in the U.S., if we want to believe, for example, Gallup's measure of engagement, it hasn't changed in the last 20 years. It continues to be the same thing. So it begs the question, if we continue to attack things by doing them the same old way, then maybe we should change the way we're doing things. And one of the things that we're doing is continuing to use survey methodology in a traditional ratings-heavy way. We're interpreting ratings in the wrong way more often than not, instead of using these powerful open-ended questions to really allow employees to tell us their story and to tell us what we should be doing in our organization to create the conditions where they're most likely to be engaged and we're actually to, more apt to retain them for a long time. So if your organization is struggling with retention, your organization is struggling with employee engagement, and you think maybe a different approach might be in line or it might be time to think about something different, by all means, give us a call. Reach out to us via our website, whatever it is. The one thing that we're not is we're not a high-pressure sales organization. We're an organization that meets our clients where they are. We've got a great team here that just wants to have a conversation with you. And if we can ultimately help you, we'd love to do that. So we appreciate you joining us today for our webinar, 2017 Retention Report, Trends, Reasons, and Recommendations. Stay tuned for our next webinar that I'm sure will be coming up in the next 4 to 6 weeks. On a new and exciting topic. Again, if you have not seen the retention report, you can go to our website and download it at workinstitute.com/retention report. And if you want to look at the healthcare supplement, you can simply go to workinstitute.com/healthcare retention report, and you can download that supplement as well. So, again, thank you for your time today. Hopefully this has been good information for you, and we'll talk to you again very soon. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.